Okay, here I'm going to discuss the simplest example that which is the free boson. And actually, I would like to discuss more this fact that John that the Rényi endover for two intervals is basically a partition function on some higher genus Riemann surface. So the question is, which is this Riemann surface, right? And so in the simplest case of two copies, which is what John already drew, so you have to take two copies of your reduced density matrix, and think of these as the rows and the column, and then attach the in this way. And so you can see. And connect the sheet in this way. And this surface is useful to think to each sheet to as a cylinder, right? As a cylinder where you can map each sheet in a cylinder where basically this part here is goes here, here, and the row of the matrix goes here, and the column here. And then you have to take two copies and you attach them. And so this becomes a torus, which is convenient drawn in this way because here is the first copy, here is the second copy. And this is genus one. So actually, let me try to do it. This is the simplest example, but then you, as n increase, in general, g is n minus 1, and the surface. So let me try to draw the case of four copies, which is something like this. So yeah, again, you have to take four of this cylinder and join them. Here together, right? And so it's something like this. Let me try. This goes like here, here, here. Yes, I hope. Yeah, I hope you appreciate the effort. Yeah, basically, what I want to say is that here you have your four copies. And the point is that this is not. So this has genus three, but. Is not the usual genus tree surface that you draw like that, right? And this is precisely because the replica construction force you to take four copies, so four handles that you attach, and these handles must be equal. So you cannot. I mean, topologically, you can fix this tree and enlarge this, and you still have a genus 3 Riemann surface, but it's not the one that enters here. Indeed, as John discussed, in this kind of problem, where so basically you have this is equal to this function. Of x, if you wanna compute this function of x in any CFT or in your favorite CFT, you have to evaluate the partition function of your CFT on this kind of Riemann surface and not on the most generic one of genus 3, which in general has 3g minus 3 moduli, but is not our case. In this case, is only one. modulus, which is this x here. And this makes the problem much simpler with respect to the usual the problem of finding the partition function on a generic Riemann surface. So let me give you a specific example. So if you consider in two dimensions the free boson, which is this, and then it's compactified, so the target space, so phi lives on the complex plane, and R is the target, the target space is simply a circle. So for condensed matter people, this is related to the Luttinger liquid model. This function Fn, so I will just give you the result, is computed by using two tricks. One is the one that Horacio Marina introduced, which is the trick of diagonalizing the twist field. This means that if you have your n copies, you have n fields, and then you have to introduce a useful combination of these m fields, such that when you turn around, you see when you turn around here, you go downstairs, and if you have n copy, you go downstairs again. And the problem in this kind of computation is that when you have n fields here, they are all coupled together, right? And they're coupled together by the fact that if you go around the origin, this branch point, you are coupled to the other field. Instead, if you take this combination, this boundary condition relates the fields phi k to itself up to a phase, and that's why you have to go back to the string theory literature and study the correlation function of on the orbifold, right? So this kind of boundary condition, this is a phase e to the 2 pi k over n phi z. Okay, so this is just to mention the technology that one uses. So this trick plus the four-point correlation function computed by Dixon, Schenker, Martinek many years ago, you can write this as an expression like this. Now I'll tell you what the objects are. So this eta is basically R square, this compactification radius. And this tau is the period matrix of this Riemann surface. So as you know, if you have a torus, you have only one complex parameter that characterizes it, which is the modulus of the torus, which depends on x. For a genus G Riemann surface, you have a matrix. The generalization is a matrix, which is G times G, and is a positive imaginary part. And again, this depends on x. And I'm not going to write it, but in this case, we can write it explicitly. And the point is that you have this theta function, which is defined like this. So for a matrix omega, this is g times g. Is a sum by vector of integer. Okay. So this is one of the simplest example that maybe the simplest that can construct but here what I want you that appreciate is that g is n minus 1. So if you want to compute out of formula that John wrote down, which is so if you want to compute the mutual information or the entanglement entropy, you have to take the limit of basically you have to take minus the minus 1, and in this case it's difficult, right? It's not as easy. So it's an explicit example where we are not able to do it. Still, we can do some other check. For instance, you can study the small interval limit that John talked about explicitly in this case, and So when the intervals are very far apart, so this x goes to 0, you plug in your expression and you find something like so this is x with some power, and in this case, so this alpha is the for this model for the compact boson the minimum between and eta and 1 over eta, and this we can write it explicitly, but again is a non-trivial expression of n which is difficult to analytically continue. And okay, so this is an explicit example, and let me it has been checked numerically by using XXZ spin chain and in the critical phase, and it works actually. So that's then.
So what is eta then?
Sorry?
Eta, what is that eta
then? Here?
Oh, no. Yeah.
Ah, eta is. The square of the compactification radius. Yeah.
Can I ask a dumb question?
Yeah.
I thought there was a theorem in algebraic geometry that said all orientable surfaces with a given genus were equivalent to the usual one, the donut torus. What you have is that with constraints on the various circles, I think. So it must be equivalent. If I have any understanding of this, it must be equivalent to saying you take the usual donut thing with donut holes and constrain the relative radii of each of the windings. Am I completely mixed up?
No. I mean, I can take the usual picture. It's just the usual donut picture, right? Mm-hmm. Which is this one. And then the usual things is claims that you have to fix some set of cycles, and then which are A and B. This is the usual thing. This is just and then compute the period matrix IJ as an integral on PJ or some prime form. You can play the same game also here. This is just a special case. The problem is that you have to compute it explicitly. Usually, you go. Typically, people leave this integral undone. Here, you have to do it. So that's the only difficulty. But once you have defined this surface, mm-hmm. which is not just a mathematical corner. This surface is defined.
These two surfaces have exactly the same topology, don't they?
Yeah, sure. The topology is the same.
It may not be obvious, but
that was the point I was driving.
The topologies are the same.
Yeah, topology.
It depends on
particular.
Yeah, it's a particular point in the moduli space. And maybe is what maybe I should mention for people that Like if the this kind of surface are not the usual one, that like the hyperelliptic one, but this n. So let me write the surface as U1, U2. N minus 1. So these are the four branch points that, you see that for n equal 2, hyperelliptic is the is regular. Here, for any bigger than 2 is singular because of this exponent here. But if you take this curve and you compute the period matrix in this way, it goes. Goes through. Okay, so let me continue. So this thing has been checked, and then you can play the same game for the Ising model as well. And you can write, once you have the good thing of the Ising model is that once you have the period matrix using bosonization formula, you can write Fn immediately. And this has been checked again using tensor network, for instance.
These are checked for what kind of, what value of eta?
Eta, for Ising model, is 1 alpha.
The other is,
you mean the square?
You mean Ising square?
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, you know, there is this this diagram of the sequel one theory. This is on the torus, so in this axis is basically the compact boson that for this formula. And then you have to take the Z2 orbifold to and the Ising square sit here. So this is. And the thing is that if you know the period matrix for the compact boson, basically you can write immediately the partition function for the Ising model, which is a sum over the characteristics. But yeah, and from the geometrical point of view, it's enough to know the period matrix. If you instead want to go to the other model, you need to know something else. So. Okay, so the main message I wanted to give is that it's difficult to construct this kind of function, but if you want to study the mutual information, you have to do it, because in the end, the expression for the mutual information, which is this one, if you take this plus this prefactor and you subtract the proper object here, you find that is equal to minus e to the 3 log y minus x plus the limit when n goes to 1. So this limit for this kind of expression is difficult to perform. So for the holographic part, I can.
Sorry. Yeah. So you are saying it's not known how to analytically continue?
No. For the compact boson, it's not known. What is known is that the non-compact boson, so when eta goes to infinity, so the boson on the line, this Fn becomes something like, so it simplifies a lot, but it's a product of some hypergeometric function. But in this case, playing some tricks, you can write down some integral formula, which is the analytic continuation, and it works against the numerics.
And
but for other cases?
Other cases, pneumatics doesn't give you any hints how to do it.
Sorry?
In other cases, looking at numerical data doesn't give you any guess.
No, yeah, no. Yeah, you, numerically, you know the curve.
Right, but I'm
no.
This numerical way to obtain it by Hedrick or
Ah, yeah, we you can extrapolate numerically. Numerically, you can plug in into mathematics, and Hedrick and collaborators suggest this method based on the Paley approximation, basically that numerically you can check that if you take this analytic expression, you extrapolate numerically, you find what people found on the lattice. So it is a... works, but analytically we don't know. And it's a technical problem, if you want, because whenever this theta comes in and you cannot simplify it as a product or something like that, it's a technical, but hopefully it will be done.
You have to analytically continue in genus, so it seems like it would be an interesting structure.
You mean genus?
Genus of the Riemann surface.
Large
G. Some like weird mathematical structure that allows you to do that.
Yeah, yeah. So when you take n equal infinity, something like that.
Or n to 1 or whatever. I mean, yeah.
Yeah, n equal infinity is interesting because you pick up the maximum eigenvalues of the reduced density matrix. So you don't see the Tangerman entropy, but somehow you get the maximum eigenvalue of the reduced density. It's still an information. Yes, but it has not been done. So let me just, from the holographic point of view, if you want, the main idea is that once you understand this the kind of Riemann surface, you have to basically you have to think that your CFT lives on this Riemann surface, and you have to fill it with the bulk. So that's the idea of holographic Renyi entropies. For ADS3, in this case, then technically is complicated. So let me briefly tell you. So from the ADS CFT point of view. So for the mutual information, the usual story that you have heard many times is the Ryu-Takayanagi expression, and when you have two intervals, basically you have to balance between two configurations, one and two. And so you have to pick up SA if is the minimal, you have to compute the length of these geodesics, which are attached to the endpoints of the interval, and you have to pick up the one with the minimal length. And it turns out that there is a phase transition, so if you compute the mutual information, basically for x less than 1/2 is 0, and for x larger than 1/2 is something like x. So if you plot it, it's something like this. So, but this is for the mutual information. Here, as I said, we have the Renyi entropies, and so the idea is to somehow construct the bulk solution induced by this Riemann surface. And the idea is the following. I just give you the idea because the details I don't really know, but you have to use this what is called in the mathematical literature, it's called Schottky uniformization. So the idea is that basically if you have a Riemann surface, you can construct it by taking a quotient of the complex plane in the following sense. If I take SL2C in a complex plane, which means that W goes to AW plus B over CW plus D, complex number, then this transformation maps circles into circles, right, in the complex plane. And so the idea is to see a Riemann surface. So if you are on a two-sphere, you cut, for instance, a genus 2 surface can be seen as a sphere when you cut four circles, and then you identify, right? If you, this is C1, this is C1 prime, this is C2 prime, and you have some generator here, some SL2C transformation that identifies these circles. If you do this, you end up with the sphere with genus 2, right? And so the idea of this process is that any Riemann surface can be obtained by giving this subgroup of generators. So you have some SL2C transformation that construct the surface, the Riemann surface for you in this way. Okay, so this is what you do in the boundary. And now you think that you have ADS3, and your complex plane here is the boundary of ADS3, of the Euclidean ADS3, so H3, which is the x square, the radius. Okay. So you have to think that in the boundary you have these circles, and to each circle you attach a hemisphere. And then, for instance, for the torus, g equal 1 or n equal 2 in the Portolini language. So for the torus, you have only one generator here, and the two circles are this one. Right, and then this generator, so if I call L this transformation induce an isometry for ADS3. So this is an isometry for this metric, and basically you end up isolating a region in the bulk, right? And then you have to evaluate the Einstein-Hilbert action on this region. Then there is a procedure of regularizing, which, but then this is the way to construct the holographic dual. This is because what I call Zn, the partition function on this Riemann surface, is this to the minus Einstein-Hilbert evaluated on this background, right, that you construct in this way. Then you can ask, here I have a transition, where the transition comes from. Okay, the roughly speaking, you have to, this is a sum over some, you have to consider all different solutions here. And basically, when you change the size of the interval, basically you are at some point there is a transition between the shadows of this kind of metric. So that's how it emerges, this kind of transition in this picture. But it is very rough discussion, and hopefully there will be some other expert about this kind of computation. But what I wanted to say is just that from the CFT point of view, you have to know this this Riemann surface and then evaluate the partition function here. So for simple model, the period matrix is enough, but for a more complicated model, I don't know.
Transition occurs for all n, all n.
Yeah, this is what they. And these people.
Is it the same value of x for all n? The value of x is the same for all n, or is it dependent?
Yeah, no, it's always 1/2, at least. Yeah, I've never done this computation. This paper, we have a paper by Hartmann, Holtner. And basically, the technology, so here in large C, CCFT, and this is in ADS 3, CFT2. But this technology goes back to Zograf, Tartajan, or also Zamolodchikov. So they just apply this technology to this case. So that's why it's a good way to understand better what people in the past did, because this is a special case, but at least you can compare with numerics, which is not...
So for Einstein gravity, you know, any entropy for any n, for say a circle or some simple shape like that?
Here is only in ADS3, sorry. It's interval. Yeah, if you have ADS4, I don't know.
What happens for a single interval? Is there a simple answer?
For two intervals, you mean?
Or even one interval.
For Rennies?
Yes.
Yeah, so for one interval, they find the expression that Jones wrote down for any n, for a CFT, large C, because here C is 3 L LES over 2G, which is...
So you get the right thing.
Yes. But the point is that, and also for many intervals, they found the expression that Ryutaka and Aji found in the first paper, which is this prefactor, but with this F is not there. So they see this prefactor. But this F, a large C, is...
You mean, for example, two intervals, they get the prefactor, but not the F?
Yeah.
So basically the F goes away at large C, or is it just they just somehow miss it?
No, the thing is that you cannot compute F for any x in gravity, or x between 0 and 1. You can just expand, you can just go close to 0 and close to 1. Because you have to solve this differential equation. It's not known the solution in general. You can go to a 0, to a 1, and you
so they don't find
this is my understanding.
They don't find it because they're in a limit where they can't.
Yeah, there is a technical problem which is there from Zamolodchikov.
It's not
that
there's something
the
wrong.
Solution.
It's
yeah.
Not that there's something wrong with holography.
No.
But then the factor has to have non-analyticity at some point, right? So it must be some minimum or something real. Not exactly the same factor, right? But I mean, the range does have some kind of non-analyticity at some point.
No, you're right. Let me... So what I learned from this paper, but is that
so So it's like some change in the prefactor, maybe that something like a minimum.
No, it's
roughly you might expect that the prefactors have two exponential suppressed terms and those will change the dominance.
Yeah, and I don't want to sell you something that I don't know. but as far as I know, this F or this the expression for a large C is not known longer for X between 0 and 1. It's known here, it's known here, because you have to solve a differential equation that I can write you, but. Yeah, if you want, but we are already over time.
I mean, if you look at the torus partition function in the case n equals 2, and you look at that for large C, if the spectrum of low-lying operators is sparse, that has a transition at x equals a half, for example. So we'll put. So that just depends on some very basic assumptions about the spectrum of scaling dimensions. So you would expect a similar thing to happen for all values of n.
Perhaps slightly wrong question. I mean, it's probably because of the end of John's discussion. You can get a lot of information by looking at the Renyi's for trace root of the n for arbitrary n as well as large numbers of intervals, because you factorize on all sorts of in these expansions, you factorize on all sorts of coefficients. So do you think you can use these to just completely characterize the CFT, or is there missing data because all the correlations are just sitting on the line?
So it tells you, if you consider n equals 2, that tells you the operator concept.
Yeah.
N equals 3 tells you all the OBE coefficients. That's all you need.
So you get the OBE coefficients.
All the correlation functions on the sphere anyway.
On the sphere.
And then you need a bit more, you know, on the
because the statement, if I remember the claim is that a CFT, like, there was this fantasy of Friedan and Schenker that you could get a CFT by looking at its all genus partition function, but you really have to get the all genus. But that involved the full moduli space of all genus.
Right.
There are all these more cyber,
but it seems like that you need to go more all over the moduli space to pick up, say, phase information about the OP coefficients or something like that.
Well, barring degeneracies of operators, which may be a problem, then you should be able to pick up all the OP coefficients from just n equals 3.
And three intervals, yeah, that would make.
No, the
Renyi
entropies for the n equals 3 Renyi entropies for two intervals. That should be enough.
You're assuming module invariants as well at that point.
Yeah.
Any other questions? You have negativity in brackets over there. I guess you did.
We didn't want to talk about it because. We'd be happy to give another talk about it. Would we?
Maybe.
I mean, it's interesting, but we don't understand it. Basically, you should be able to get the negativity by analytically continuing these results to x bigger than 1 or something, right, Eric?
Yeah, basically, so I wrote this fn of x, but this is between 0 and 1, right?
Yeah.
And in the end, you have to take this and analytically continue here.
Oh, here, yeah.
The negative part.
So x goes to minus infinity.
Yeah, that, but that's another measure of entanglement.
So. But you don't expect like to have a short interval expansion for negativity, right?
Yeah, yeah. Well, the problem is when we do, we get zero.
Right, right.
To all orders in the short interval expansion.
But so the small, I mean, the small x behavior, this is an open problem, what the asymptotic behavior is at small x?
Yeah, for the negativity, not for the negativities. The
no,
f
not
bar.
The small x, the other,
for the
negativity.
For the negativity, yeah, for the negativity you get something like this is in x, between 0 and 1, and...
Yes, so we get something which is...
Yeah.
Zero to all orders in
yeah, analytically
in the short interval expansion. So in fact it appears to vanish by e to the minus one over x.
Yeah.
So can we say that the large difference is you have much information that is not here and negative, so it's all classical information.
Right.
It's a classical information because it's correlation functions,
two-point correlation functions, something like that. I don't know. Yeah, I don't know whether negativity capture all the quantum part. Yeah. Quantum information people, but nobody's here.
Okay, let's take this opportunity to thank Eric and Jonathan.